This is Digital Story Podcast number 702, August 27th, 2019. Today's theme is 5 Things I Learned Taking Pictures on Las Vegas Boulevard. I'm Derek Story. I packed my carry-on bag with 3 cameras, a couple of changes of clothes, and a water bottle, then flew to Las Vegas. My goal was to explore the Strip, not as an afterthought, as I normally do while there for a conference, but as a primary goal. 4 days later, I returned home with a collection of images and a bit wiser than when I had left. The latter is the focus of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I have a screenshot of the weather app on my iPhone that was captured at 7:46 p.m. last Wednesday in Las Vegas. It reads that the current temperature was 106 degrees. That's right, 106 degrees at 7:46 p.m. It was starting to get dark. By the time I wrapped up the evening's photography at 11 p.m., the temperature had dropped to a tepid 92 degrees. So weather and heat was definitely, you know, part of the landscape, part of the challenge that I faced working those 4 days on Las Vegas Boulevard taking pictures. Now, there was also a number of other things that I either prepared for or that I learned along the way. And I'm going to pick 5 of them to talk about today because I think they're useful for all types of travel photography. Las Vegas, for sure, but I think many other places as well. And I thought you might be interested in hearing some of the things that I did right and some of the things that I had to learn while there in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. So I'll start with the first one right now. Do your homework. Do your homework. I think homework is important for any type of photography assignment. Street photography, a lot of times we think, hey, we're just going to go out to this spot, to this urban location, and whatever we encounter is whatever we encounter. But the fact of the matter is that if you do a little bit of homework, you can definitely work smarter, be more efficient while doing so, and I think just have a better overall experience. And let me give you some examples of what I discovered with a little bit of research beforehand. For example, I learned that there is a second monorail access at the MGM Grand that saved me 15 minutes of walking through the Smoky Casino to the entrance that everyone else knows about. Now, the MGM Grand is an important place if you're using the monorail because it's at the end of the line. So you can get on there. You don't have to worry about, especially when it's busy, you don't have to worry about it being full when it arrives. You're at the end of the line and, you know, the cars are virtually empty. The other thing about it is that MGM Grand anchors down one end of the Strip and then the monorail takes you up almost all the way to downtown at the other end of the Strip with stops along the way. So when you're doing street photography, it's really a great way to, you know, get around. And, you know, public transportation and street photography, I think, are just, you know, peanut butter and chocolate in the sense that you kind of stay in the zone, right? You're in the mix, right? Even when you're using public transportation, you know, you're in the mix as opposed to, you know, being out in the world and then getting in your own little car and then being out in the world. You know, that to me is a different experience. I found the second monorail entrance, and I'm not exaggerating, saved me 15 minutes of walking every time that I wanted to use the monorail. And that happened through research, through finding a cool blog post. And I tell you, it was a big deal. I also learned about free trams that I didn't know about before. So you can buy a day pass for the monorail and get around. But there are these other free trams that casinos and hotels use basically to connect you to their properties that are, you know, not right there. When it's this hot or if it's wet or cold or whatever it happens to be out, saving you that time walking by taking public transportation or private transportation, I guess, in this case, again, helps you really conserve energy, be more efficient in your work. I found ATMs through research that were a fraction of the service charge that was charged at most casinos. So when you're working somewhere like the Las Vegas Strip, you're not going to see a lot of bank ATMs out there. And when you're working out there, you're going to need money and you're going to run out of money, especially when you're there for 4 days. Through my research, I discovered ATMs where the service charge is only $3 for a transaction compared to $10 per transaction in most of the casinos. I mean, that is a big difference. And I remember one night, it was so hot. And I needed some cash, so I found, you know, one of these $3 ATMs that I'm referring to. And so I figured I just saved myself $7. And so I used that $7 to get myself a really delicious ice-cold smoothie that really just turned my whole evening around, you know, having that smoothie. So I thought that was money well invested. And again, this came through research. And then the other thing I find through research are really the best places to eat affordably instead of getting caught in tourist traps or getting caught in places where the food isn't very good and it's expensive. A little bit of research will help you find those good places to eat, those rest stops, those places you can kind of recharge, maybe review your images. So doing your homework, even for urban shooting, and sometimes I would say, especially for urban shooting, I think pays huge dividends in the final outcome. Second, take into account the factors that affect your energy. Now, I have said this time and time again on this podcast that energy is so important to creative photography. And if your energy begins to wane, you're not going to be as creative. You're not going to take as many chances. You're not going to work as hard. You're not going to be as focused. All those things, all those bad byproducts of low energy. So for me, a factor is always, you know, keeping my energy level high so that I can continue to be creative when I'm working out in the field. For example, on this shoot, in order for me to be effective in this searing Nevada heat, I had to plan my excursion so that they incorporated some relief during the shoot itself. In other words, I did not want to be out walking miles and miles in 108 degree heat. I mean, that's just, you can only go so long and then you're going to get tired, right? And probably a little dehydrated as well. I would plan my shoot so that I would use casinos and other air-conditioned areas as part of my travel route. So I would be outside shooting, working in the heat, and then I would be inside in the air conditioning, cooling off, and finding other shots to shoot. And one series that I did, I thought was really interesting, restaurant interiors before they're open for business. A lot of the restaurants in Las Vegas, you know, they open up around 11 a.m. or so, but they set up the night before or really early in the morning, and you're walking by them, and you have visual access to them. And, you know, they're all very interesting, often quite beautiful. And how often do you get a chance to shoot a restaurant interior without any people at all in it and just really get to focus on the elements themselves? I got to do this time and time again on this particular trip because I was traveling, you know, through the casinos and through the restaurant areas as part of my way to stay cool and to conserve energy. And it, you know, ended up producing a whole nother series of shots for me. Another thing that we talk a lot about on this show and was so important was keeping the weight of what I was carrying down, right? I did not want to carry a lot of gear with me. So I was working with a smaller bag. It's one that's not available anymore, unfortunately. It's the Think Tank Urban Approach 5. It's really a cool bag. It fits my iPad mini. It has a slot that just fits my iPad mini perfectly. And then I can get two cameras and a lens or two in there. And the cameras that I was carrying on the trip, and those of you that have been following the trip on Facebook and Instagram know this already, the Canon G5X Mark II was one of the cameras. Second camera was the Olympus OMD EM5 Mark II. Yeah, I broke that one out for this trip. I was really in the mood to shoot with it, and I'm glad I did. And on it, I had the Panasonic 20mm f1.7 lens. And that is such a great lens for me for urban photography. It's just a hair wider than 50 millimeters. It's nice and fast, f1.7. And it just works great. I can use it for people shots. I can use it for, most structure shots. Very versatile lens. And of course, a beautiful lens in terms of sharpness and contrast and color. And then sometimes I carried with me a Contax Aria film camera with a 50 millimeter lens, and I would swap that out with the E-M5. So I always had the Canon with me, and then it was either the Olympus or the Contax camera, depending if I wanted to shoot film or have an additional digital camera with me on the shoot. I also had this very nice that I've had for a long time. Actually, I have two of them because I like them so much. They're 500 milliliter water bottles. They're made by Nike, and they're stainless steel. And they're not too tall, since they're 500 milliliters instead of 750 or more. And it'll fit inside the camera bag. So when I take out one of the cameras to shoot with, and I really feel like I should have a camera out most of the time, then I can put the water bottle in there with the other camera. And having water with me and constantly refilling it as it got low was another huge thing, because when I would take those breaks, I would sit down, I would drink water, I'd try to be in air conditioning, I'd review my pictures, get my energy back up, and then go back to work. And by doing that, I really felt very, very comfortable most of the time. Except when I was standing in the direct sun at 108 degrees. No way to feel comfortable doing that. So this was really a combination of, planning my routes, not carrying too much equipment, and then making sure I had water with me. And by the way, in my camera bag, in the Think Tank camera bag, I had a couple other lenses. And I did use the fisheye a couple times, the Pancake fisheye. But I had the 45 millimeter f1.8 with me as well, another lens that I absolutely love. But I ended up not needing it very much because of the zoom on the Canon G5X covered those shots for me. And the only way I would have really needed the 45 millimeter is if I needed that extra stop, compared to the Canon in low light. As it worked out, I didn't. But I did have that lens with me and available in that camera bag. So I was traveling really light with, just the iPad mini, a couple of camera bodies in my water, and then usually a snack. And then another thing that I carry that's really helpful is just a little bit of peppermint gum or some sugarless peppermint mints. And you'll be surprised how you have a little bit of water and then you have a little bit of gum or a few mints. It really kind of helps, get you going again. So all of these things helped me keep my energy up, and keeping my energy up kept my creativity up, and I felt like I came away with more shots as a result. Don't shy away from tourists. Embrace them. When you're in urban settings where there are a lot of tourists, when you're at a tourist destination, to be perfectly honest, most people in these locations don't care about you or your camera. And it's really wonderful. So I can stand there and take pictures as people are walking by and, never have anyone really give me a second glance or confront me about it or any of that kind of stuff. And if someone did want to talk to me, it was usually just because they wanted to talk to me. I'm interesting because I'm tall and all that kind of stuff. Then I would be a tourist as well. So I'm really just one of them. And if you really approach it this way, then you have a whole nother layer of interesting possibilities because of these people. Fun thing about tourist destinations to me is that they draw people from not only all over the U.S., but really all over the world as well. And so you get a lot of different looks in one place. And having that variety of looks, especially with the juxtaposition of the buildings and the neon lights and all the stuff that's going on, I think it's just really fascinating. And I think sometimes photographers don't take advantage of the tourist element. Either they're trying to wait for a shot that don't have people in it, or they're, nervous about taking pictures when people are approaching them, all those kinds of things. But my experience has been quite positive in tourist destinations. As I talked about last week, I do get approached when I'm taking pictures, but it's not usually by the tourists. It's usually by the shop owner, for instance, when I'm taking a picture of a sign, or a security officer somewhere where they think you shouldn't be taking pictures. You know, it's been more that kind of stuff. Rarely do I have a tourist problem. In fact, I can't even name one right now. So I think they're an element that is a plus and that can lead to some good possibilities. You know, embrace the tourist population and, go ahead and always be respectful, of course, and, all those sort of things. Don't take pictures of people in compromised positions and, the stuff that I don't have to tell you, already. Understand that they are part of the landscape. They are part of this public places. And they can be quite interesting. The fourth one is don't look like a pro. And this actually goes nicely with the not shying away from tourists in the sense that part of the reason why no one, seemed bothered by me taking pictures in the middle of a bunch of people was because I left a giant DSLR with the super telephoto at home. and it's one thing having a little, the G5X, or the EM5 in your hand taking pictures. And especially if you, have like a Hawaiian shirt on and, Bermuda shorts. It's another thing, being all dressed in black, right? And then, having a giant DSLR with a telephoto lens that you're aiming at someone, that it really has that uncomfortable feeling. And I think that how you are in these situations and what your vibe is and what your body language is and what the gear is that you're carrying, I think really makes a big difference in terms of how you're received by the environment. And I'm even against doing things like wearing a bulky photographer's vest packed to the gills. These days, stuff like that is just not going to fly. It's going to attract attention for all the reasons that we already know. So if you want to stay off the radar of security people and you don't want to, get people, wondering what you're doing, and even start to attract the curiosity of tourists, who are starting to wonder what you're doing, then don't look like a pro. Blend in. Hey, I'm perfectly fine looking like a tourist. I'm very comfortable. I have a goofy side to me anyway, so it seems to work. And then, of course, because I am the nimble photographer and I'm using, light gear, I think that really helps. And I think that has a lot to do with me just being fluid in these situations. And finally, the fifth one is be flexible. And this really applies to all aspects of your being. I actually think it's just good for life in addition to street photography. But be flexible mentally and adapt to your environment. So the things I was talking about, making sure that you have water, making sure that you don't get, sunstroke. If it's really busy in one area and crowded and you can't work, then move to a different area. Be flexible, as you adapt to your environment. Be flexible in your choices of subject and technique. Yes, we all have, things in our mind that we want to do, but if it just isn't working, then cut bait and move on to something else, right? Try different techniques as well. Don't always shoot the same way. As I mentioned in last week's podcast, there are all sorts of different things. One of them that I kept in mind was the whole notion of reflections. I was in a place where there are a lot of cool reflections. I remembered that from the previous podcast. And so I was working with reflections a lot on one of the mornings. And it was really fun. So I was experimenting with different things as just being flexible in my choices of subject and technique. And then being flexible physically. And what I mean by that is just work all the angles. Be a physical photographer. Shoot low. If we have a LCD that angles, that makes it so much easier and there's no excuse not to. Shoot high. Work around things. Do all these sort of things. Don't be like the statue with sneakers on and just always, be rigid and shooting the same way. And finally, be flexible emotionally. Understand that the world doesn't care about your photography. It isn't there to accommodate your needs. The world has other things to deal with at the moment. So if someone does accidentally bump you, or if, let's say, the elevator fills up that you wanted to get on and you couldn't get on it, you know, all these sort of things that happen in urban environments, do not let it throw you off your game. Be flexible emotionally. Just take a deep breath. Wait for the next elevator. Give people the benefit of the doubt, and then keep moving. Stay in your creative zone. So by doing these five things, you know, that I'm talking about, you know, doing your homework, taking into account the factors that affect your energy, and not shying away from tourists, but embracing them and not looking like, you know, Darth Vader pro photographer out there, and being flexible on all levels of your being, I think that this leads to successful shoots, regardless if you're in Las Vegas or if you're in Chicago, if you're in New York, or if you're out, you know, in some sort of beautiful landscape environment. I think these things work regardless of the location. So now that I'm home, right, how do I feel about the photo shoot after dedicating this time to this project and, you know, embracing these things that I'm talking about? Well, currently I have 32 images that show the people and the places on the Las Vegas Strip that I like a lot. That is my pick set right now. I have a 32-image pick set that I enjoy. And, you know, I whittled it down. It started out around 46 or something like that. And then, you know, as you go through and you go, man, I want to keep that shot in there because you have some sort of attachment to it, but it really isn't as strong. And deep down inside, you know it isn't. At some point, you have to let it go. So I've let a few of those go, but I thought that the shoot was really successful. It has different components. It has people components. It has vibrant light components that you get from night shooting. It has the whole restaurant interior series. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, different parts to this shoot that I like. And I think a lot of the reasons why it has a variety and I like as many shots as I do is because of my approach to these 4 days in Las Vegas. And that is in spite of, like I said at the top of this post, searing heat that would just, you know, melt your hair if you're not careful. So anyway, I hope these are good reminders for you and things to keep in mind as you prepare for your next urban shoot, or really any kind of photo shoot that you really want to come away with a nice collection of images from. Coming up in October and November, I have a new course on podcast skills. I've talked about the last couple of weeks. I just want to remind you that registration is open at thenimblephotographer.com. Just go to workshops there or use the link in the show notes. And this is going to take you behind the scenes. This one-day online seminar, you can stay at home or anywhere that you have an internet connection. This one-day online seminar is really going to take you into the world of podcasting and a lot of the things that you may have wondered about that you need to know. And I think it'd be helpful if you're thinking about starting your own podcast. And I also think it would be useful if you just want to learn the ins and outs of podcasting and, you know, what it takes to produce a show. So that is coming up. The first course is going to be October 12th. And the second course is going to be November 9th coming up. Participation is limited for each course. And as I said, you can sign up right now by going to thenimblephotographer.com. Click on workshops, and both courses will be right there. You can sign up right on the spot. And if you have any questions, just use the contact form there on the Nimble Photographer. Send me your question, and I'll try to get back to you as soon as I can. These are going to be fascinating. We're going to have a great time, and I'd love to see you there. Speaking of podcasts, I ran this poll. How do you listen to your podcasts? I ran that over on our Patreon site, and I thought I'd just share the results with you today. And so it went like this. Okay, the number one way that our listeners here consume the Digital Story Podcast and their other podcasts is using the Apple Podcasts app. And actually, Apple Podcasts had twice as many users as the second place, over twice as many as the second place app. And the second place app was Overcast, which I was happy to hear. I mean, Overcast has been around for quite a while, and it is, in our audience, the second most popular way to consume podcasts. And then in number three, there was this gaggle of Pocket Cast, Google Play, Spotify, you know, all sorts of other stuff in the third position. But in our audience, Apple Podcasts, number one, Overcast, number two. Those are the two ways that people predominantly listen to this show and the other shows they like. And I thought you'd be interested in knowing that. The story of Paul. So we're going to go back to Las Vegas Boulevard for a few moments here. I'm going to tell you the story of one of my encounters there. When people approach me, it usually takes me a few seconds to gauge how to react. And I try to keep an open mind, especially, you know, from folks that, you know, aren't tourists who, you know, might be living on the street or, you know, might be local residents, you know. So I try to keep an open mind and not judge ahead of time. But at the same time, I want to be smart, right? So I want to make sure that, you know, I'm going to be safe and that my gear is going to be safe and all that kind of stuff. So all this has to happen in a matter of seconds. So when Paul plopped his backpack down on the bench next to me, I was sitting on this bench working with a reflection of all things. I saw him notice me, and I was shooting with a Contax film camera at that time. What I was doing took his interest. So he walks over to me, plops his backpack down next to me, and he asked me about the camera. So, you know, I was telling him a little bit about it. I said, it's a 35 millimeter film camera. And you know, a lot of times people go, I can't believe people still, you know, shoot with film. And, you know, that usual conversation that goes on. So as I'm talking to him, I really discover that he seems like he's a pretty nice guy, you know, and that he was genuinely interested and wasn't setting me up, you know, for something else, you know, working me for, you know, whatever things happen sometimes on the street. Also, his dad was with him, and I didn't know that he was hanging out with him. You know, they had been doing something, and Paul had a set of sunglasses for him, and I don't know the story behind that, but the dad was trying them on, and they were just, you know, kind of having fun out there on Las Vegas Boulevard in the morning, right? This is in the morning. So at one point then, Paul says, can I take your portrait with that camera? I go, well, is that okay? I mean, can I? And he goes, yeah. No, really, I'm all right, really. I'm really curious, and I want to hold it, and I want to take your picture with it. I kind of ran it through my brain. I said, all right, let's do this. So I handed him the camera. Right away, he had a way of going about the shot that made me think that either photography had been a passion of his or a profession of his or something in his past, because he was too at one with it too quickly, if you know what I mean. He knew how to hold it. And he asked me, do I need to use a film advance with this to go to the next frame? Or I go, no, it's got an auto winder built into it. So all you have to do is press the shutter button and it'll advance for you. So even asking that question about the film advance and stuff made me think that, you know, he had some experience and he knew how to focus the camera and he was working some different angles. He's actually following a lot of the advice that I give on the podcast. And he took a series of shots of me. And while he was doing that, I was taking pictures of him with the Canon G5X. Because he was very interesting, I thought. And I loved the way he was holding the camera and all that. And then after we did that series, and he did hand the camera back to me, he asked if I would take a picture of him with his dad. And I said, I'd love to do that. So, you know, his dad wasn't into it. He's kind of shy. He goes, no, he doesn't want to do that. He was one of those things. And I said, yeah, I do want to do that, actually. And so, you know, Paul kind of, you know, talked his dad into it, and I got I snapped about three frames, but one of the frames I got of the shot was possibly the shot of the morning. I love the shot. You know, Paul is clearly, and Paul's probably about maybe 35 years old. Paul's clearly happy to be having this portrait taken of him with his dad, and you could just see it in his energy. And his dad, you know, he started kind of, you know, having fun with it too. And the shot is, you know, Paul's kind of pointing at his dad, looking right into the camera. And his dad has his arms crossed, and he's got these brand new shades on that he got from Paul. And he's kind of looking up a little bit with kind of a sly look on his face. And they just look great. So Paul wanted to see a few of the shots, and I showed him. And then he said, well, can you do one full length too? So I did some full length shots. And then I gave him my card, and I said, you know, what you have to do now, my email's on here. You just have to send me an email so I can get in touch with you, and then I will send you these shots. And he's going, okay, I don't know how fast that'll happen. It might seem a little sketch when it comes through. And I said, that's okay. That's all right. I'll keep an eye peeled for it. But I think he's not someone that has internet access all the time. So hopefully he hangs on to the card, and, you know, when he does get a chance to send me an email, that he does, because I'd love for him to see these pictures. Now, the reason why I'm telling the story of Paul is because when I'm working in urban environments, it's so easy to get caught into preconceived notions about situations. And, you know, it would have been very easy for me to say, hey, just put a hand up to Paul and say, look, I don't want to interact with you for whatever reason, you know, for some judgment or some that I've made about this. And in this case, and this is not the first time this has happened to me, that once I judged that the situation was okay and then I went with it, I ended up having a really beautiful experience. And I thought about the interaction with both he and his dad for the rest of the day, and it turned out to be definitely the highlight of that day. You know, I have to be really careful when I talk about things like this, because I don't want to give advice in terms of, hey, you should just like interact with strangers, because, you know, that could really backfire and not be good. I think really the point that I want to make is, however, you know, sharpen, you know, your street sense. If you're going to be out working in the urban world, sharpen your street sense and, you know, really practice at, you know, judging if you're safe or not. And then in situations where it feels like you're going to be safe, keep an open mind. I'm not saying engage or not engage. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is don't judge too quickly and keep an open mind. And sometimes maybe good things will happen. It certainly did for me on this morning on the Las Vegas Strip. Try LinkedIn Learning free for 30 days. So I have a tile on all the pages of the digital story for LinkedIn Learning. And as I mentioned last week, we're sort of in a transition period. Lynda.com is still there, and all my titles are still there. But clearly LinkedIn is starting to move in the direction of their LinkedIn Learning site. And you can see all of my stuff there as well, in addition to all the other creative stuff, in addition to all sorts of stuff that isn't on Lynda, business stuff and so forth. And if you want to take a look, you can try it free for 30 days. Just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story and, you know, take a look at it. If you're interested in brushing up your skills on anything, creative stuff, business stuff, you need to finally learn PowerPoint, whatever it happens to be, click on this tile, give it a whirl, and see what you think. A little virtual camera club business. A big thanks to our Inner Circle members, the folks that support this podcast through their membership to the Inner Circle. And I thank all of you so much. I have some new content that's going to be going on our Patreon site scheduled for September. So if you're an Inner Circle member, keep an eye out. You should get an email notice when I publish something new there. And just know that I thank you so much for being a part of this effort. I so appreciate it. And also, we have tiles from B&H and Amazon and LinkedIn Learning and other sites there on the digital story. If you are going to make a purchase, especially if I've talked about like the G5X or whatever, on either B&H or Amazon, then if you click on those tiles first, it really helps support the site. We have tile for audio. We have a tile for Luminar. You know, you can pre-order Luminar 4 now. We have all sorts of stuff on there. Check it out. Something that grabs you, click on it and take a look. And then finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. I'm working on an article right now that I'm hoping will be up by the next podcast, where I'm talking about fine art Red River paper. I test 4 different grades, and then I'm using 11 by 14 paper because it's almost a perfect match to the dimensions of a Micro Four Thirds sensor. And, you know, that whole thing fascinated me. And the 11 by 14 prints are a nice size. It's a cool article, and I'm doing some fine art stuff with it. So I'll let you know when that's up. But again, you know, my partnership with Red River Paper made all of this possible. They have amazing paper. I mean, this is museum quality paper that I'm testing. This is archival stuff. You could go to the Museum of Modern Art and see this kind of paper, you know, hanging on the wall there. They have tutorials, they have reviews, everything you need to get your printing going. Red River Paper, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm glad to be back in Northern California. The weather's a bit more to my liking here, but I had a great time in Las Vegas and I'm really happy with the pictures. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Come back and join me then. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.